You are now locked into Interconnected Voices.
Interconnected Voices.
I'm Tatum Swithin-Bank. I'm a creative. I am a trustee at the Roundhouse, and I also work within charity and looking after people who've experienced sexual violence.
Today I want to talk to you about social housing in London. What was your route into social housing?
Well, when I was growing up, I wasn't actually in social housing, so it wasn't until I was in a really vulnerable position that I had to kind of put myself in the system. So I have muscular dystrophy, limb girdle type 2B, which is a progressive muscle disease that is when your muscles deteriorate and then they don't regrow. So it affects my hips, my legs and the backs of my arms. I can't do much that's physical. Like, I can still walk at the moment, but I can't access stairs very well. I can't jump, I can't run, I can't go on my tiptoes. So it affects quite a lot of my mobility. I had a bit of a complicated upbringing with my family anyway. So when I moved out when I was 18, I worked a lot of jobs to pay, you know, private renting. And then when I got a disability, I couldn't work anymore, so I couldn't afford to pay my rent. When it first happened, I'd kind of like stay in people's rooms for like really cheap. And then my aunt said that I could stay with her. So I would stay, like I stayed at her house probably about like 3 to 4 nights a week. But even with that, I could literally just have one suitcase of stuff. So I'm living out of this suitcase. I'm trying to build a life for myself. It was just a lot. It's just that feeling of being so unstable. You don't feel like you're kind of having any engagement with society or the things that you want to do because you're living in limbo the whole time.
Hello, and you're listening to Interconnected Voices, Why Vote Labour? A special series where we speak to young people about their experience of interacting with our political system and ask them how might life be different under a Labour government. People under the age of 30 have lived the majority of their adult lives under a Conservative-led government. We're the group most likely to vote Labour, but we've never lived as adults under Labour policies. So what should we make of this? What's next for Labour? What policies do Labour offer us that are connected to our real experiences? And how would society look different under a Labour government? I'm Cherise, and today we're looking at the housing crisis and accessing social housing. Young people are far more likely to privately rent than they were in 2005. And according to the English Housing Survey, private renting is the most expensive and unstable form of tenure. Having housing as a young person in 2020 relies on forking out proportionally higher rents and boomeranging back and forth to family homes. And this really makes me wonder, when neither of those things are an option for you, what do you do? What is it like for individuals who have nowhere to turn but the social housing system? I spoke to Tatum about her experiences of going through the system. What was it that made you decide to go through Camden Council to access social housing?
I thought that going through Camden Council would be the best thing for me to do because I am from Leicester. Couldn't go back to Leicester because I don't have a good relationship with my parents and I'd be vulnerable and there's no life for me there. So I thought the closest that I have to a borough in London would be Camden because my aunt used to live here. So I was like, you know, at least I can go with that information. I just had to turn up every single day, like to the council and just ask them if they'd help me. And they kept just saying like, no, they didn't really understand why I was there. They were like, why have you not been in the system before? Had to explain to them, you know, now I'm in a position where I need some help. I was standing in queues every single day, like really unsure what to do because I didn't have anyone with me. Like I was doing this completely blind all on my own. And I was like, I need to speak to somebody. I need like some sort of support about how I get housing. And then they'd just be like, oh, we can't help you. They'd sit you down at a computer and you'd fill out like all the information. And then it would be stuff like, how long have you lived in the borough of Camden for? And technically, because I moved to London when I was 18, I was moving around all the time, just like from sofas, paying rent in places. I hadn't lived in a borough of London for more than 5 years.
As Tatum describes, one of the first things you need to do to gain access to social housing is to register with your local council. They will decide your need for housing. Since 2011, the criteria for what counts as a person who needs housing has varied dramatically across local councils. However, many councils use a points-based system. When you apply, you gain points which define how in need of housing you really are. You get points if you live in unsanitary accommodation, if you have a chronic long-term illness, or if you are at risk of homelessness. In many areas, accessing social housing depends on the length of time you have lived in a certain borough. For example, in the Camden borough, you need to have lived there for at least 5 of the last 7 years. Personally, I feel this really discriminates against young people. They are most likely to have moved around to find employment or move from their childhood home for college or university.
When you're younger, you move around. Yeah. Like, if you don't ever feel like you've belonged anywhere, mm-hmm. like, how can you then live 5 out of 7 years? And if you're in a vulnerable position, especially for me, I wasn't always disabled. So I didn't know that I wouldn't be able to work and private rent for the rest of my life. And then I'm asking for help and they're like, oh, we just can't help you because you've not lived in a borough for that long. And it's like, what is that the only option if I've done that? And they just keep turning you down every time you apply.
Unfortunately, Tatum's experience is not uncommon. In England, only around 1 in 10 young people approaching the state for help are accepted as statutorily homeless. And more than 1 million people are currently on the social housing waiting list. The main reason for this is the demand for social housing is so much bigger than the supply. There just aren't enough council houses. In fact, there are about 1.5 million fewer social homes than there were in 1980. But what's the reason for this decrease?
People want a home they can call their own. People want a home they can call their own. If you've been a council tenant for at least 3 years, you'll have the right by law to buy your house, and that's that. That's that.
The answer to why there's a current lack of social housing is partly down to the Right to Buy scheme, which was first implemented by a Conservative government under Margaret Thatcher.
Disappointment to many, many people.
The scheme means council house tenants can buy their house at reduced cost from the council.
The only condition we make is that if you sell it within 5 years, you'll have to return a proportion of any profit you make to the local authority.
During her time as Prime Minister, she focused a lot of policies on home ownership. This remains prevalent in the Conservative ideology.
Thank you very much. We're going to use that money to radically expand one of the Conservative Party's landmark ideas, the right to buy your council house.
There are some benefits to this policy. Council house tenants suddenly had access to their own home, which helped them to gain financial security and break down class barriers, as owning your own home was no longer just for middle and upper class individuals.
That is 1.3 million extra families, a whole generation given the security of a home of their own.
But it has also created problems, and this is why. The Right to Buy scheme means that social housing has been moved into the private market. Property that was once owned by local councils to house vulnerable people has instead found its way into the hands of private landlords, who let out those properties at high rates.
Let's be clear about what this means.
A third of council housing has been sold in this way. In fact, the son of Thatcher's housing minister, Ian Gow, owns 40 former council homes, which he rents out privately. The Conservatives were supposed to build more homes to replace the ones sold under the Right to Buy scheme, but they didn't. Research by the charity Crisis shows that 145,000 new homes are needed each year to help alleviate the housing crisis. In 2018, only 6,000 homes were built for social rent. Instead, the Conservatives introduced more bills to encourage more social housing to be sold.
And at the moment, the housing bill is a disaster.
The 2016 Housing and Planning Act recommends that council property that is high value and desirable, for example, larger houses in central London, is sold privately.
The selling of the council high value homes makes no sense. In Brent, it means that we will sell over 70 homes a year, family homes. So are we saying that people shouldn't have large families? It just makes no sense. And I do hope...
That was Dawn Butler, MP for Brent in London. The Conservatives also introduced a policy called Pay to Stay, which means that council tenants in high-value properties had to pay more rent to stay in that property. So what does this mean? Basically, if you grew up on a block in North London and you now see wealthy professionals privately renting in that area, there is a chance that those people are renting from former council homes that were sold off through the Right to Buy scheme. It also means that relatives or friends who were renting from the council may now pay more than they did under a Labour government, simply because the Conservative government is trying to encourage people to leave those properties so they can be sold off. This is often what people are talking about when they say areas are getting gentrified, as it doesn't always improve the quality of the areas, but what it does mean is there's a shift in ethnic balance, which changes the area's character.
If a home for social rent is sold off, it must be replaced with a new home for rent in the same area. It's important, otherwise it means what you're doing is moving people, socially cleansing people out of a certain area, which is wrong, and we've heard it so many times.
Labour has called for Right to Buy to be suspended and the sale of higher value council homes to be stopped. Their 2019 manifesto promised to build 100,000 council homes per year. And while the new Labour leader, Keir Starmer, is yet to provide detailed plans, he's committed to delivering new social homes in every community. The bottom line is, a third of council homes were sold under the Right to Buy scheme. Local government has less social housing than it ever did. There are less places to house vulnerable people, resulting in a greater strain on our housing system and a longer amount of time spent in temporary accommodation like hostels. Which brings us back to Tatum. Tatum pulled a social worker aside in the queue outside the council building asking for support.
They said that they couldn't help me, but they'll keep an eye out for when spaces open up in a homeless hostel. That took another 7 months, about 7-8 months.
What?
Yeah, of me having to like move around still. I was finding ways to do it, but it was just
a lot.
And within all of this, it's me constantly on their back. Like, you have to literally push and push, which is exhausting anyway when you're already vulnerable for different reasons. And then finally, I got an interview at one of the hostels, which was also part of Camden Council, and I had an interview. And then they were like, yeah, cool. It was such a relief when I got that phone call. Yeah, and then moved in.
That in between, you're explaining, a lot of people are in hostels for months. And from what I've heard, the standards aren't great. But what was your experience with that?
I was in the hostel for just under 2 years. I cannot even tell you how stressful that was. Like, just feeling like being in these tiny rooms, I was the youngest person there. There were different people like knocking on your door all the time, asking if you wanted to like smoke some crack, asking if they could borrow money, loads of noise. Like, I didn't sleep for like months and months. Eventually, I actually got used to the noise. But it was just, to be honest, an awful way to live for a few years. And it was really hard to maintain any kind of hope because you're like, the problem was I never knew when it was going to end. They never said, okay, this, you know, it's going to be a few months. Or even if they said to me when I first moved in, oh, this is going to be 2 years, at least then I could get some perspective and kind of balance my life out. But every single day, you didn't know how long it was going to go on for. So I was like, this could be like 10 years. And the only reason why I eventually did move out was because they were closing the hostel. Otherwise, I'd still be in there.
So it literally blows my mind that you were in there for that long. And I'm sure when you went in the hostel, it was not a thought in your mind that it would be 2 years.
No.
Because that when you think hostel, I just think temporary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But some people spend their whole lives in a hostel. Like, there was people that were in the hostel with me who were like, I've been here for 10 years. And I was like, wow. And they were like, yeah, because I'm not vulnerable enough. And the whole point system is just awful. What's so awful is you have to play the system.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I was always being honest. And then someone said to me, hey, you're not going to get anywhere with the council if you're honest. And then you feel like, wow, I have to become this person who's playing the system. I'm not well. Like,
yeah.
I should be getting support and I should be getting help. I shouldn't have to then exaggerate things or literally be on death's door for you to help me. Being in these situations, when people have so many different issues, then they're surrounded by more people with different issues. Mental health issues, drug abuse, like, you're in a hostel for a reason, very varied reasons. And then my experience, my mental health got even worse because then I'd hear like screaming or shouting and I'm on edge all the time, on fight and flight mode. So how am I supposed to find some kind of stability and move forward with my life if I'm constantly in these like situations.
That's the thing that's so insane to me. When I was reading about all of this, it's because it's a point-based system. They're not legally allowed to tell you where you are on the waiting list, which is ridiculous because when you think about how much we look at mental health nowadays, they're not even looking at the capacity of those people that have mental health issues and what that could do, the anxiety that's creating. And you would have been at a disadvantage in terms of the points, because for Camden, you need 120 points. And because you hadn't been living there, you start at 50, right? So you've got a long way to go to get a house.
It was about a year into my time in the hostel, I got 150 points, but I couldn't start bidding on flats until I got 300 points.
Oh,
so I was literally
gosh,
like, when is this going to end? Yeah. And then eventually, because the hostel was closing, they could do like a special case and be like, instead of putting her back in the hostel, let's try and find some housing. So like, I guess in some ways got lucky that that had happened, because maybe I would still be in a hostel because the point system.
The Fabian Society discovered that the combination of the point system with the low supply of council housing has pushed the most vulnerable and poorest members of society into social housing.
Vulnerable people are placed around more vulnerable people.
Not only does this exclude people who are not seen as vulnerable enough,
you have to prove again and again, that you are ill enough,
but means that the most vulnerable members of society are crowded into one community.
Then you kind of get stuck in these environments. And
evidence suggests this can lead to things like unemployment, breakdown in families, and crime.
There's no space for progression and evolution.
The Conservatives have also made it possible for local councils to refuse housing you at all if you don't accept the first housing choice you've been given, despite if the conditions are bad or if it's not close to your personal community. But if we look at the Labour government from 2005 to 2010, they put a lot of emphasis on what's called choice-based lettings, which means applicants have a choice about the property they choose and where it's placed. This kind of policy helps to prevent pushing large groups of vulnerable people into one specific geographical area. At the end of the day, Conservative policies are leaving millions of people in insecure housing situations, and millions more scraping by in private accommodation. The overall picture here is one of a government who are more interested in lining the pockets of private landlords than providing a safe and secure place for people to live. For example, in 2016, 307 Conservative MPs voted against a bill that proposed all rented homes should be fit for human habitation, which basically means your landlord should always keep your home in a safe and clean condition. 72 of those votes were from private landlords, including the PM at the time, David Cameron. Under this philosophy, where our government views housing more as a financial asset than as a right, and where they're not interested in investing and supporting social housing, well, in that world, under that government, what happens?
And as of this morning, I'm afraid to say there are now 79 people that we believe are either dead or missing, and I sadly have to presume are dead.
Coming from West London, the London Fire Brigade are dealing with a huge fire in a residential tower block in West
Grenfell
London.
Grenfell Tower is part of a social housing complex of nearly 1,000 homes near the Westfield Shopping Centre.
Police have confirmed 12 people dead so far, but that figure is expected to rise significantly.
That number is expected to
shortly
rise.
Before 1 o'clock on Wednesday morning, an inferno broke out in a tower block in West London.
There was no alarm.
But right. What's so curious is that £8 million has been spent refurbishing.
Yeah, because it was an eyesore for the rich people that live opposite.
The flames were already beginning to spread. Residents were trapped on the upper floors.
But the block had recently been refurbished, and ministers have ordered emergency checks on towers where similar work has been.
Some of them had repeatedly raised concerns about fire safety in this block in recent years.
And today, the Chancellor's shock revelation that the cladding around the building may have been banned.
The people who died and lost their homes, this happened to them because they are poor. We are in one of the richest spaces, not just in London, but in the world. Repeated requests are ignored. There is nowhere that rich people live in a building without adequate fire.
Yo, Theresa May, where's the money for Grenfell? Well, you thought we just forgot about Grenfell?
Until there is justice, there will be!
No peace!
show you care. We're the Housing Minister. We're the Home Secretary.
Shame on you, Theresa May!
It was a tragedy, though, Mr. Speaker, but it was an avoidable tragedy. A tragedy is when there's an earthquake, when there's a tidal wave, when there's a volcano, which you cannot understand or predict. But this was an avoidable tragedy.
The events at Grenfell Tower made it clearer than ever that we need to seriously address a broken housing system, which is focusing on profit rather than people. We are in a society where people lack choice, stability, and safety in their own homes. Grenfell was in Kensington and Chelsea, which is the most socially divided borough in the country.
But in a sense, it's a microcosm of the problem. Young people can't afford to get a private rented place because they can't find the money for the deposit unless they've got a big bank of mum and dad. People in desperate need can't access council or housing association places because they're not in a high enough desperate need, so they get put in private rented accommodation with all the insecurities attached to that. We're in a nation that's not at ease with itself on housing. It cannot be left to the market. We have to publicly invest. Previous governments have done that. We need to do it now.
I think what I've noticed the most about the whole housing issue is they won't help you unless you're on the floor. You'll say to them, hey, like, I can tell that my health is going to get worse. I need some help. They're like, oh, you're not a priority because right now you're not really, really sick. And it's like, if these things were put in place when people are saying they need help, then you can prevent people getting so unwell and being in positions where there's no turning back, but they don't do that in the first place.
Do you feel like when you was in the job centre that you were discriminated against because of a type of disability you had, not being so visible?
I think it's really hard with rare diseases because people, they'll be like, I don't even know what that is, so I don't even know what information to give you. And sometimes it's not taken seriously because if you look at me and you don't know me, then it's quite invisible and until you see me do something physical. So a lot of the time when I am asking for help, I mean, literally, I've had this many times from people within the system who look me up and down and they literally stare at me like, what are you talking about? And then I have to like to explain to someone why I deserve to have help. And I really struggled to get help in the system because I didn't look as disabled as they needed me to look. It's like I had hospital letters from that like really high up doctors at the National Hospital of Neurology, like literally saying Tatum can't do these things. She needs this help. She needs to be housed. Like all of this stuff. It didn't matter. I was like, I'm literally bringing the most information I could possibly give to you. And then still you're like, ah, well, you don't look that disabled.
And in an ideal world, how would the whole social housing system look in your eyes?
I think in an ideal world, there'd be more support within these systems because they make it so difficult for you that you just give up. And then, you know, so many people end up homeless when if they were helped in the first place, they wouldn't end up becoming another statistic. I hear all the time, constantly from people within the housing, you know, who are working within this. And then they're like, we can't help. We're doing our best. And I think, of course, they like, I bet the majority of them are doing their best. But it's like, we've got enough money to put into other things, but we haven't got enough money to put into the most important thing in the world, which is people having somewhere to live. Like, that is a human right, but it doesn't seem to be. It seems to be a luxury now, which is absolutely wild. So I think more care and more, even like people with different mental health issues who can't handle the paperwork, or someone like I've got a friend with autism who literally just can't even fill anything out, and there's no one there helping them because they don't have parents to help them. So where do they go? where do they go when they're completely homeless and then they've got no one holding their hand through it? You know, so I think more care within the housing system would be good.
Thank you so much for listening. Next time on Interconnected Voices, we'll be looking at the Universal Credit rollout, which is a major reform for the UK's benefit system. To find out more, follow @interconnected_voices on Instagram, and please stay home and stay safe.
Transmission Roundhouse. Cloud Radio.